believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Morning, everybody, and welcome to 2A Radio with Bill Carnes. I'm your host, weekdays at 9 o'clock Central AM. All right, a little bit of housekeeping to go through. If you don't have a local affiliate to pick us up, or if you want to talk about Republic Broadcasting and get others in your circle of influence who don't necessarily have an affiliate near them, you can always go to republicbroadcasting.org. Look at the shows that are available. And you can also stream live as well. If you'd like to spread the word about Republic Broadcasting, you can order 100 generic Republic Broadcasting business cards. They're $8. It includes shipping, and you get a bumper sticker with it. And in order to get that, you just call 800-724-2719 weekdays from 9 to 6 Central Time. You can also send to 2251 Double Creek Boulevard, number 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664 for the same deal. Now, good buddy of mine by the name of Dave Champion, he has his own show weekdays at 3 o'clock Central right here on the Republic Broadcast Network, the Dave Champion Show. Now, Dave Champion is sponsoring the Dave Champion Show Defensive Handgun Course, May 15, 16, 17, and 18, this year, 2009, out at Front Sight Firearms Training Institute, just outside of Las Vegas. Actually, not too far from our broadcasting studio here in Pahrump, Nevada. Now, there are many different options for this, but the thing is this. If you own a gun, you own ammo and whatnot, you can sign up for this course. It's $400 to attend, and that goes to the Dave Champion Legal Defense Fund. Now, those of you who listen to Dave know what that's about. If not, in short, Dave Champion is the tip of the spear in the tax honesty movement, and he's in the process of taking a one-man against a huge entity fight to the IRS in court. So that goes to the Legal Defense Fund. There are other options when it comes to some memberships out at Front Sight, a gun and gear package at Front Sight and whatnot. You can go online and check that out. You can also call Dave's office and speak to his assistant, Margo. Now, Margo can be reached at Dave's office at 775-751-0811. Let me spit that out to you again. Area code 775-751-0811. You can call Margo to sign up or get some additional information on the course. Now, I left Front Sight in October of 2008. When I left, I was the lead rangemaster and lead instructor trainer. So I was the only guy on staff at that time who was qualified to rangemaster every firearms course on the schedule, from beginning to advanced, handgun, shotgun, rifle, submachine gun, M16, precision rifle, all the advanced stuff. And I wrote virtually every curriculum on the schedule. So I have agreed to go with Dave and be there at this class. So you can meet not just one, but two RBN hosts at the Dave Champion Show Defensive Handgun Course, May 15, 16, 17, and 18, 2009. Sign up, call Margo, 775-751-0811. We'll be back after the break.
Right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. Uncle Sam's
out here to shoot me. I got to ask a question. Does U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder own stock in firearms manufacturers? Reason I ask is his recent comments that the Obama administration might seek to reinstate a federal ban on so-called assault weapons only boosted gun sales that already had increased since a presidential election. Matter of fact, January and February both set new sales records as well for those months, as did the prior December, prior November, prior October, and prior September. That's particularly the case in Bay County, where local gun dealers report that they can't keep several kinds of firearms and ammunition in stock. Nationwide, FBI instant background checks for gun purchases in December of 2008 increased 24% over the previous December. And there was a 49% spike the week of Obama's election in November of 2008. Holder didn't exactly measure a bunch of Americans who already distrusted the president on gun rights. He did not reassure them at all. However, his remarks also received a frosty reception from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Surprise, surprise. She said the administration's position was news to her, and she showed zero enthusiasm for revisiting the ban, which expired, in 2004. She said, "I think we need to enforce the laws we have right now." Now, that's what the pro-gun, pro-Second Amendment lobbies have been saying for years. And now we get Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, Democrat from California, huge anti-gunner. Whenever you name the big anti-gunners on the Hill, who do we name? We name Feinstein, Pelosi, Schumer. These are the names that consistently come up. And she says she has zero enthusiasm for revisiting the ban and, quote, "I think we need to enforce the laws we have right now," end quote. Imagine that. Pelosi undoubtedly recalls the political prince Democrats that paid a huge price for their conspicuous pursuit of more restrictive gun laws. What was that price they paid? Losing their seats in their next election. The assault weapons ban was passed in 2004, and 2 months later, voters handed the Republican Party control of Congress. Many political observers, including former President Clinton, attributed Democrats' close loss in the 2000-2004 presidential races to pro-Second Amendment forces in swing states who were successfully portraying the party as a bunch of gun grabbers. Indeed, Al Gore's inability to win his home state in Tennessee was widely blamed for his support of more gun control. Imagine that. Since then, Democratic candidates have pretty much shelved talk of banning guns. Instead, they seek to reassure voters by expressing support of the right to bear arms while donning orange hunting vests and rubbing elbows with rifle and shotgun-toting sportsmen. Let's hope that, despite Holder's statements, the assault weapons ban remains politically radioactive for most of Congress. Where do these guys get their power? From being in office. That's their power, is from being in office, guys. They lose that, they lose everything. So, the restriction never made much sense to begin with. It sought to outlaw a class of firearms primarily for their cosmetic features, the way they looked. The guns appeared fearsome, right? They were these big, menacing, ugly guns with their military stylings. And it was named in this, such as flash suppressors, pistol grips, folding stocks, bayonet lugs, right? Grenade launchers. Now, let's address a couple of these. Flash suppressors, that goes on the end of the barrel, and when you shoot, there's a flash. What that is that's the powder in the shell casing that didn't burn up by the time the bullet got to the end of the barrel. So it just burns in a flash at the end. This is something that keeps that flash from happening. Now, there's also the thing of what's called a pistol grip. Now, Interesting thing is, if you look at any sort of stock on any kind of gun, it has what is known as a pistol grip. What they're referring to is something that looks like you can grab it like you would a handgun. However, pistol grip is the term of anything on any long gun stock that your firing hand grabs. It is called a pistol grip, regardless of its shape or function, or what the people on the Hill would like to think a pistol grip would be. Folding stocks. Now, I gotta tell you, if you've ever tried to fire a long gun that had a folding stock, folded out of the way, and tried to shoot it, it doesn't work very well. I mean, the gun fires, but can you hit anything? Not really, because your hands are separated. They're not together. Your hands are actually together when you've got both hands on a handgun. They're separated with some form of some abstract amount of distance, depending on the gun you've got, when you fire a long gun that's not in your shoulder pocket. So these folding stocks are designed for transportation storage, not for shooting. Now, this has been made very popular to our very unfriendly Hollywood crowd that do all these nifty little gun things to sell tickets to movies and sell advertisement on TV shows. But the thing is, they portray you and I, responsible gun owners, like Bubba. I mean, what are we portrayed as to people who are not gun fans? Well, a bunch of redneck, beer-bellied, beer-swilling and moonshine-making, tobacco-chewing, back-of-the-pickup-truck-riding, hooting and hollering hillbillies with guns. Now, the majority of gun owners in this country do not fit that stereotype, but that's what we've got. Part of the reason is what's portrayed by the people with guns on film and television. Now, there are some exceptions. Matter of fact, if you remember Colin Farrell in the movie SWAT actually had some pretty good gun control. The thing is they actually went overboard, like the fingers straighten off the trigger until you're ready to shoot. I remember a particular scene where they're moving in on bad guys, known bad guys who had just caused death and mayhem, and allegedly SWAT is who the guys are that are rolling in on these guys, and their fingers were off the trigger. When you've got your gun pointed at a known bad guy, that's when your finger's on the trigger, because you're ready to shoot. They flinch, they do something bad, they go to try and harm or kill you or a team member in that situation, boom, you shoot them. So your finger goes on the trigger, they were straight dead. The movie Taken with Liam Neeson is a wonderful movie when it comes to proper deployment in a defensive nature of guns, just with the gun control. All right, it's good for gun control in a defensive nature. So with that exception, those couple of exceptions, there's a lot of real BS out there. I mean, you look at this thing with Angelina Jolie. I forget the name of the movie where she's flipping this gun around and the bullet's curving. My God, people, are you serious? It defies the laws of physics. It cannot happen, but they're showing this. You know how many jackasses went out and tried this? I would imagine hundreds, if not thousands of people who had access to a gun, went out to a range and decided to, at least knowing that the bullet wouldn't curve, or at least hopefully knowing that, tried shooting this way. Can you imagine the irresponsibility of this? So we don't have any friends in that. Bayonet lug. I can't think of any instance where I have come across any information where anyone's attached a bayonet to a rifle and killed someone in a civilian setting in this country. But bayonet lugs were evil. Also, the little attachment for a grenade launcher. Now, we can't get grenades. We cannot get launchers that propel real grenades. But when manufacturing the upper assembly of an AR-15, the upper raw assembly is exactly the same in a military version as a civilian version, with the exception of some of the things that are added into it, such as the bolt carrier in the upper. The bolt carrier is the only thing that's different. It's the lower where there's a lot of pieces that are different. They're literally two separate pieces of gun. So why change all of their milling machines to make two versions of the same damn gun? Well, they don't. They just leave it on there. So what they ended up doing was literally chopping the thing off at the end of the manufacturing process to make people happy during the 10-year ban of this sort of deal between 1994 and 2004. Thank God it was a 10-year sunset on that. As again, I believe pretty much all laws should have a 10-year ban when coming out of even federal, state, or local laws. That way, after 10 years, they can evaluate whether it was worth a damn or not. This obviously was not. This magazine capacity limiting thing, the guns themselves, it doesn't show that there had been any, not even a single life saved because someone had less rounds in a magazine or a different version of a gun. You could still get AR-15s after this alleged ban that just didn't have the bayonet lug feature or the flash hider feature that were available. Ridiculous. So it basically your guns are being profiled. And, you know, profiling is a bad word in this day and age. But they profiled your guns, and they're still trying to do it now. The state of California does it all the time. They profile guns as much as possible. Illinois does the same thing. New Jersey's gone a couple of rounds with that in the past. So we need to bring that up, that they're profiling our guns by the way they look. That's just ridiculous. You know, there's no conclusive evidence that the original ban reduced any violent crime whatsoever. Now, again, violent crime starts with people. If they don't have a gun, they're going to grab something else. There's all kinds of headlines about gun crime, but there's not headlines about people that take really so much as a knife or a car or a hammer or a bat to people. We don't hear that on such a national or international level. More when we return from the break.
Responsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
I love that bumper. George Lynch of the Lynch Mob, formerly Dokken. I got to tell you, a good friend of mine by the name of Jared Adams. We went to high school together. We reconnected after high school. We actually both instructed out at Front Sight together. Very excellent competitive shooter, excellent defensive shooter. As a matter of fact, he and his father both won some bench press competitions back in the day. He's also a guitar player and a huge fan of George Lynch as well. As a matter of fact, he and I did a midnight run to go see a show in L.A. once, and then again just this last summer in Vegas. And anyhow, I chose that bumper and George Lynch's Mr. Scary specifically to entertain Jared. So there's my homage to him. Okay, back on this about Eric Holder and this whole gun ban thing. Eric Holder, really, again, I referred to him before. I'll keep referring to him as basically an anti-gun attorney general scumbag. He's concerned that Mexican drug cartels are arming themselves with automatic weapons and grenades. Again, those weapons are already illegal, and it's hard to imagine organized crime syndicates like the cartels having any problems overcoming a U.S. ban on weapons that are singled out for their accessories, such as the bayonet lug or the flash hider. If the Obama administration really wants to disarm the cartel, it should end the war on drugs. It should not target lawful American gun owners. All right? So this war on drugs is making it a crazy border area up and down the Mexican border. I'm sorry, the Mexican side of the Mexican-American border. If we just secure the damn border, pretty much that drug war ends, at least when it comes to physical trafficking across land or across the Rio Grande. All right. Now, the administration alleges that the drug cartels are arming themselves with American-purchased guns. Now, I find that hard to believe. I actually have a couple of things here about this Mexican issue that I'd like to read to you. Now, this is by a guy by the name of Ralph Weller, entitled, "You and I Can't Buy Guns Mexican Cartels Own." The administration is not dealing straight with us on Mexico's gun problem. Now, I'm going to go through and trim a little bit of this down. Suffice it to say with the introduction, Ralph Weller worked in Mexico, owned a place in San Diego, but lived usually the work week in Mexico, and then went back to San Diego on the weekends and also during holidays, because otherwise it would have been just a tremendous amount of driving. It didn't work just across the border. He said it would have been well over 100 miles a day in commuting. So it says, I stayed in Mexico for a Mexican holiday my first year. I don't recall the holiday. Normally I'd leave Mexico for the holiday, but it was in the middle of the week, and one day was not long enough to come home. All I know is that on that particular Mexican holiday, Mexicans love to fire guns into the air. That evening, as I sat on the balcony of my hotel, the gunfire that erupted in celebration was quite unbelievable. It was so intense, I backed off the balcony and watched the festivities from a couple 3 feet in the room. We're talking warlike firing of weapons. It was that intense. As I listened that night to gunfire, I was somewhat shocked at the amount of fully automatic gunfire. It wasn't sporadic. It was continuous throughout the city. For a country that bans guns, I thought, how in the world did they get their hands on these full-auto weapons? Clearly, what sounded like M16 fire was prolific, along with AK-47 autos and a smattering of smaller caliber full autos like 9mm. Gunfire can be heard in almost every American city on New Year's Eve, but that's a pop-pop here and there. I've never heard full auto weapons being fired, at least not in the San Diego area. The next day, I went into work and sat down with a trusted senior Mexican manager. I looked at him and said, I thought all guns were illegal in Mexico. He chuckled and said, so you stayed in town last night. As the conversation progressed, it became clear that guns are so common in Mexico as tamales at Christmas. Everyone he knew, including himself, owned at least one gun, and it matters not whether it's a semi-auto or fully automatic. They're all illegal, so why stop with semi-autos? Though clearly illegal in the states, in most instances, a lot of Mexicans have more firepower in terms of military weapons than we can only dream of owning in the U.S. As time went on, parties in the city at middle-class Mexican homes become a way of life. Most Mexican managers in the plant I knew owned a gun. They knew that I was a gun wonk. As it turns out, they couldn't wait to invite me over to their place on Friday night and show me their collection. Semi-autos, some very high-end SIGs, and other European handguns were not uncommon, along with piles of old revolvers. I thought I was seeing everything in the States, but in Mexico, it's not uncommon for people to own fully auto military rifles. Everything from M16s, Uzi machine pistols, and the most popular select-fire AK-47 military rifles is what Ralph Weller writes. These are not the so-called assault weapons you can buy at local gun shops in the U.S., but full select-fire military-issue rifles. Now, I know you don't know, I know you're dying to ask, did I see any U.S. military-issue weapons stolen from the U.S. military? The answer is not a single one. More about where the Mexicans are actually getting these guns when we come back from the break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Rule one, assume it's loaded. Rule two, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule three, listen to the 2A radio show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, carrying on with this article written by Ralph Weller, who lived in Mexico part-time and worked there for years, talking about how he came across all kinds of fully automatic military-style weapons in Mexico. And the guns in Mexico have been illegal since around 1968. So he was basically pointing out, not a single weapon that he came across was marked with U.S. military markings. Everything was marked with additional foreign markings on the receiver, including M16 rifles, or they had nothing at all. He says, I saw firearms manufactured in Europe, China, Russia, and South America, along with U.S. manufactured weapons. I saw rifles that looked familiar with no place of manufacture, no serial number, or manufacturer's logo. The information was not removed. It was never there to begin with. I can only assume they came from some of the illegal arms manufacturers in India or Pakistan that produce copies of weapons. It was obvious that none of these firearms came from a U.S. gun shop in Tucson or San Diego. You couldn't buy them from a gun shop in the States if you tried. So this now begins to blow a hole in Attorney General Eric Holder's thought and Obama's thought or position that the cartels are arming themselves with guns purchased legally in the U.S. and smuggled across the border. Okay, it seems Mexicans have a rich heritage of firearms ownership prior to the 1968 ban. Despite the laws against owning them, they ignore it. Most Mexicans will say that they need it for personal protection of themselves and their families. The other reason is they don't trust the government or local law enforcement. Imagine that. If they have to use it in their home for self-defense, whether they end up in jail is all dependent on how much money they can come up with or who they know in the government. It's also dependent on who they shoot. But given the alternative, with the high crime rates, the middle-class Mexicans willingly and without reservation take the risk of owning a gun. Despite being able to own a .22 caliber pistol or rifle, Mexican law requires them to be stored at an approved firing range. Where's the firing range, I asked many times? No one knew of one. Where's the gun stores in town to buy local guns? Gun stores? No one ever recalled seeing one anywhere in Mexico, let alone their city. He writes, I'm sure somewhere, maybe in Mexico City, you might be able to buy a gun, but not in this city of almost 1.5 million residents, and the gun traffickers know it. Where do ordinary Mexicans get their guns? Well, they buy them from a friend who got them from a friend, right? Now, here's the interesting thing. In Mexico, in their military, more often than not, more often than happens in most militaries, they lose guns. They lose guns out of the military, just unaccounted for. Now, why is that? Well, you get guys that, and this is not just me, you know, coming off the cuff with this. This is a historical precedent. You get these young Mexican men that join the military, get all this wonderful training. Then, when they leave, what do they go do with this training? Well, this training is a very valuable asset to the underworld in Mexico, to the illegal drug cartels, to the paramilitary groups that protect these drug cartels. So, you're a young Mexican guy. You've got all this training. What do you do with it? Well, you somehow misappropriate a gun or few, and you get your discharge papers. You go to work for them. And, oh, hey, look, hey, here's some guns. Here's some guns. Where did they come from? Well, they may very well have come from the States. They may very well have come from China or Russia or anywhere else in South America or even the Middle East. So that is where the majority of these guns are coming from, guys. They are not issues. We don't have an issue of American citizens going in to one of the 6,000-plus gun stores that are in the bordering states. That would be California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. Buying a gun legally, going through the background check right then and there, the instant background check, and buying a legal gun, putting it into the car and driving across the border to Mexico and selling it to drug cartels. Has that happened? Well, matter of fact, evidence says yes. However, the vast majority of those purchases are of handguns. And quite often, the vast majority of those come from private party transfers where the people who were selling the guns probably should ought to know a little bit better. So can American guns be held illegally in Mexico? Well, yeah, every gun in Mexico is illegal. Now, has anybody here other than me gone into Mexico on foot or in a vehicle and then come back. Well, I have. Those of you who have can attest. What happens is this. Going into Mexico, you just walk. Coming back into the United States from Mexico, you have to go through a process to get readmitted. That includes speaking one-on-one with a border agent. They ask you questions. You got to show identification. You got to declare anything that you're bringing back with you that was obtained in Mexico. If they so see fit, either randomly or through some other form of reasonable idea of suspicion, they can search you and everything on you, which is the same thing, actually, when you fly into any international airport in the States. It's treated the same as a border. You can fly into Chicago, O'Hare. You can fly into Denver International and go through the same thing because you're coming in from a foreign country. And until you leave that secured area, you're subject to the same rules as the borders. So do the Mexican officials stop you on the way in to check and see what you're going in? No, it's carte blanche to bring in anything you want into Mexico. Anything. The thing is usually you don't have a problem with stuff, illegal things, going from the U.S. into Mexico. It's generally the other way around, which is why we have the border protection. All right? With that, let's go on a few more of these things dealing with this whole Mexican issue. This comes from Friday, March 13th. Over the past few weeks, a number of stories in the press regarding the escalating violence in Mexico has dramatically increased. Now, hardly a day goes by when another story describing the atrocities committed by violent drug cartels cannot be found in an American newspaper or on a cable news channel. Gun owners need to pay attention to these stories because the opponents of our Second Amendment rights are starting to use this situation as a pretext to push their gun ban agenda here in the U.S. New Attorney General scumbag Eric Holder is the first administration official to cite Mexican drug cartel killings as an excuse to reinstate the semi-auto ban. And now some in Congress have jumped on the bandwagon. Just this last week, two House subcommittees held hearings on the issue. The Border, Maritime, and Global Counterterrorism subcommittees of the House Homeland Security Committee had a hearing entitled Border Violence, an Examination of DHS Strategies and Resources, while the National Security and Foreign Affairs Subcommittee of the House Government Reform Committee held a hearing entitled Money, Guns, and Drugs. Are U.S. inputs fueling violence on the U.S.-Mexico border? At the latter hearing, leading anti-gun absolutist Tom Diaz, senior policy analyst at the Violence Policy Center, testified, calling for a litany of new gun laws, including the reinstatement of the 1994 semi-auto ban. Imagine that. All right? So here what we've got is a Mexican problem, which you've just demonstrated through what this fella in Mexico saw and what other reports in Mexico have come back to us. And quite honestly, folks, a little common sense. All right? You can't buy full auto guns in a gun store in America just over the counter in a few minutes and take them across the border. You can't do that. All right? Also in Mexico, they don't restrict certain components that are restricted in the States to convert guns into full auto. So it's a Mexican problem. It's not a U.S. problem. So what they want to do is restrict all these laws to be able to obtain these guns. And they're using the excuse that the guns might make it across to Mexico. So we shouldn't sell them in this country. Who does that punish? You and I. It's not about the Mexicans, guys. It's a frickin' excuse to screw you, to screw me, to screw anybody else in this country, everybody else in this country that wants to be able to own guns for sporting uses and self-protection. I don't hide behind the exclusive sporting use of guns. I have guns for hunting, sure. I have guns that I would use to go, say, if I'm going to go pig hunting or deer hunting, or if I'm going to go wild turkey hunting, or if I'm going to go hunting for goose or hunting for duck or something like that. If I want to go varmint hunting, I've got a gun for going varmint hunting. Okay, I've got guns for different hunting applications. However, the majority of the guns I've got, I shouldn't say the majority, about half the guns I got are for self-defense. That's why I really got into shooting, was for self-defense. Because I knew at the instant I needed to have a cop around, there wasn't going to be one. Because bad guys are smart enough to look around side to side, check out their environment, make sure there's no cops, and then bam, just like that, they launch an attack. Execution of violence on their behalf. So, who are you going to call? Well, I'm going to call up my 1911, or I'm going to call up my Glock, and that's what I'm going to use to protect myself or my loved ones. I am not in this for being able to see if I can hit a target, you know, in an 8-inch plate at 1,000 yards. Now, I've done that, and it's enjoyable. However, that's not the main reason that I own guns. Do I own a couple of guns that'll do it? Yeah, sure, I do. But they don't get used that much. Self-defense is what I'm in this for. And quite honestly, that's exactly what the Second Amendment was written for. The Second Amendment was actually written, if you go back in history and you look at it, for defense and for offense if you realize that the government's getting out of control. So that's what it was originally written for. And a lot of people have construed it as, oh, it's for sporting purposes. Well, you know, guns are also for sporting purposes is how I look at it. Here's another article on this whole Mexican drug war bloodbath. Guns from the U.S. are destabilizing Mexico. Right. Okay, in an in-depth story by Salja J.A. Talvi, published in Alternet on March 18th, calls for attention to America's total failure to stop military-style assault weapons and other arms from being trafficked into Mexico. America's total failure to stop this. Okay, now, I gotta ask you, is it America's responsibility to set up to watch people leave the country? No. It's America's responsibility to watch people and check things coming into our country. Wherever they're going to, it's that country's responsibility. If Mexico has an issue with this, then Mexico should set up a border patrol. They don't have one. They don't use one. Can they do it? Sure they can do it. Hell, they might be able to piggyback on the infrastructure the Americans have already put out to build these facilities, these border inspection facilities, to check people going in. Who knows? They could piggyback on that, potentially. In addition to America's addiction to drugs, the blame lies significantly in the hands of U.S. lawmakers who refuse to stand up to the gun lobby and firearms industry to enact comprehensive laws to control guns in our country. You've got to be kidding me. We've already proven, this is rhetoric, that all of the problems with guns and drugs in Mexico are the fault of America. It's the fault of the administration, the fault of lawmakers in America, what goes on in Mexico. I got to tell you, I can't think of a bunch of other countries and a failure on their part to really affect anything in the United States. Now, perhaps if Mexico would actually do something about the drugs, and quite honestly, they're trying. I got to tell you, it's one of those deals. Whenever you try to enact change for the better, things get worse before they get better. Mexico is going through that right now. Starting with the former president, Hugo Chavez, he wanted to really get rid of a lot of the corruption within the Mexican government from local up to federal. He started the process. The Mexican president now is trying to carry on with that, and they're getting backlash. It's going to get worse before it gets better. And somehow, our gun rights are getting mixed up in this because the people on the Hill, the people in the administration, are finding some abstract way of drawing this indirect line to you and I. Continuing. Mexico's violent drug war, armed with American weaponry, according to this article, will be a shameful legacy unless solutions and stringent gun laws are passed immediately. You've got to be kidding me. Now, listen to this author. A minute, 60 seconds, is all the time it takes for an employee in one of almost 7,000 gun shops dotting the U.S.-Mexico border to accept a wad of cash from an eager customer to fill out a triplicate sales slip and slide a nice new Taurus 45 caliber pistol across the counter, or two, or three, or 20, as the case may be. Absolute bull. It takes quite some time to fill out the forms, plus there is a check that is mandatory that must go through before any gun purchase can be done. So, and also dotting the Mexican border. She's in, this author, she's including all the gun stores in California, including the ones up in Northern California, so that's dotting the border some several hundred miles from it. Continuing. And those handguns to the countless tens, perhaps hundreds of thousands of pistols, sniper and assault rifles, I love this term, semi-automatic machine guns, shield-piercing bullets, grenade, plastic explosives, as well as anti-tank weapons outfitted with self-propelling rockets, plus countless thousands of drug warriors of one sort or another who are ready, willing, and able to use them. If it looks like you've got a battle on your hands, you do. The Mexican drug war has hit boiling point. Now, this author is doing her best to draw the conclusion that up to hundreds of thousands of pistols, sniper rifles, assault rifles, semi-automatic machine guns. What is a semi-automatic machine gun? A machine gun is fully automatic, not semi-automatic. Shield-piercing bullets, grenade, plastic explosive, and anti-tank weapons are being bought legally in gun stores in America and shipped across the border to Mexico. Give me a break! More outrage when we return.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The two-way radio show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, I hope you're about as pissed about this whole thing with the Mexican issue somehow being aligned to you and I having to face potential anti-gun laws as I am. From Monday, March 16th, here's an article. There may be good reasons for deploying the National Guard along the U.S.-Mexican border, but illegal firearms isn't one of them. The administration recently launched a study to examine whether soldiers should patrol the southern border to staunch the flow of firearms headed for drug dealers in Latin America. The silence you hear is the concerns about armed drug gangs headed here. In short, the administration seems more concerned about the guns going south than the non-citizens streaming north. We're going to examine whether and if National Guard deployment would make sense, the president said. We look forward to seeing the study. So they're more interested in deploying the National Guard to the U.S.-Mexican border to stem guns going into Mexico than to stop illegal criminals from coming in. Are you serious? What happened to this country? You know, I got to tell you, on Dave Champion's radio show, he went through a story, I don't know, a week or so ago, about this report that came through Missouri and their law enforcement division about looking for people with bumper stickers of third-party candidates and bumper stickers of Ron Paul and things such as that as indications that they might be right-wing militia members. Now, I got to tell you, McCarthyism, the McCarthy hearings back post-World War II, were looking for communists in this country because they were way too left and we didn't want them. Now, after the fall of the Soviet Union, it actually came forward that, in fact, McCarthy was on to them. They had put people in Hollywood. They had put people in areas where they could spread the ideals, basically what Michael Moore's been getting away with for the past decade or so. That those people were put in by the Communist Party in Russia. So McCarthy was right. Now it's the opposite. It's as though we want to hold on to this whole socialist aspect heading into communist tyranny in this country. And now the officials are looking for the conservative people actually want to have the Constitution looked at and followed by all branches of the government. But no. Now we've got the president waiting for a study with bated breath. Ooh, rubbing the hands together to see if we should deploy National Guardsmen to try to stem the infantile amount of found American guns across the border in Mexico. And a lot of those have been stolen. The majority have been stolen in the U.S. and carted across the border, not purchased in gun stores. Okay, if you're a criminal, you can't buy a gun because the criminal background check says, hey, you know, you're a criminal. All right. So there's your day on what's going on the U.S.-Mexico border. It's up to you to contact your representatives on the Hill and your government and tell them enough is enough. Until next time, this is Bill Carnes. You can reach me, Bill, at 2aradio.com.
The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.